and it exploded. I mean, it was amazing. It's sort of suddenly this demand was there, this changing landscape was there.
Welcome back to the Word Bullet Podcast, where we chat with the leaders in commercial real estate to answer all questions space as a service. This podcast is for anyone involved in commercial real estate in any way. If you're an investor, a fund manager, developer, property manager, agent, or broker, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'm your host, Caleb Parker, and today I'm joined by Johnny Rosenblatt, co-founder of Spacemade, a fast-growing co-working brand with 11 locations and several in development across London, Leeds, and Birmingham, England. It was super cool to record this episode inside the podcast studio at The Landing, Spacemade's location in Putney, London. I got to know Johnny during his Headspace days, the brand where his journey began back in 2012, which he ultimately sold to BE Group. In 2019, he co-founded Spacemade with Dan Silverman, and they've had early success capitalizing on the work near home movement. In this episode, Johnny shares his insights and experience as we talk through the challenges and opportunities he's encountered in his journey enabling building owners to deliver flexible workspace through their white-labeled operational platform. We talk about the importance of flex and community and why landlords are finally adopting flex in their portfolios. I asked Johnny if he believes all buildings should have flex. His answer may surprise you. Before we head into the studio with Johnny, I want to give a big shout out to our headline sponsor this season, Freshwave. Freshwave is the connectivity infrastructure as a service provider, making sure mobile phone signal works in office buildings. Freshwave has connected some of the biggest, most challenging wireless environments in the UK, and they can be found in over 2,000 buildings nationwide. And let me tell you, from personal experience, Freshwave improves customer satisfaction in office buildings. Okay, Jeff, let's kick it.
Now, Jeff, let's kick it.
Welcome to the Word Bullet Podcast, Johnny.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's so good that you're here. We're actually in your podcast studio in Putney.
Yes.
And it's called The Landing by Spacemade.
That's right. That's the one.
And I want to talk about Spacemade, but before we do, I want to give everybody some context for those who don't know Johnny Rosenblatt. Let's go back to the beginning. Headspace.
Yeah. So where do I start? I mean, I was working in commercial property from about 2007, 2008, and working kind of in the much more traditional world of it. Come around 2012, I decided to set up my own venture, which was called Headspace Group. So we set up we started in Farringdon in 2012 on Hatton Garden. And that was a kind of classic leasehold model of co-working flex space, and grew that business over 5 years, sold it in 2017. It was a really interesting journey. I think during that period, it spanned that kind of pre-WeWork days into like the WeWork explosion and the explosion of flex, I think, during the kind of mid 2010s, which really sort of drove the market to kind of, you know, in an upward trajectory. And then from there, you know, I think suddenly what I could start to see was that sort of leasehold model was, you know, that there were benefits to it, but I think there were problems coming. I think what we were starting to see kind of 2016, 2017, you know, big companies throwing a lot of capital into buildings, lots of new buildings coming up. It was starting to become trickier to compete, particularly for a smaller business like us. You know, we had about 100,000 square feet across London and Manchester, and it was a great business, but I was starting to see it was throwing more and more capital into the buildings as desk rates started to plateau a little bit. So it felt like the right time to exit, and thankfully had a good exit, had a great buyer. Shout out to David Saul, a genuinely superb guy. Like, I got so much time for David and for Simon Rusk as well. And they, you know, they behaved immaculately through the process. And that was sort of late 2017. I took a little breather, had a bit of time off. And what started to become apparent to me was that there were a lot of landlords that were desperate to sort of do something in this space. So 2018, 2019, I kept getting the same phone call. I've got this building. You know, it was always, I want to do a WeWork. That was the sort of the phrase, how do I do it? And it became very apparent that there was this growing need in the market to kind of deliver, you know, flexible space, hospitality driven space, but in partnerships with landlords, because frankly, the landlord market were getting just pushed out of the kind of, you know, the tenant market, I suppose, and the tenant demand. So that became a pretty major thing. And over time, I then met my now co-founder, Dan Silverman. And we realized this was a pretty major problem across the board. And so we spent a bit of time working on it, spent a little bit of time on the kind of the business plan. And in right at the end of 2019, we launched SpaceMate.
Good timing for that.
I mean, you know, you come into a world where you're like, right, here we go. Here's our business plan. Here's our first building. Let's nail this. The office market's back. And then 3 months later, the world falls apart. No one wants to go to the office. No one's allowed to go to the office. We were actually, interestingly, we were about to open our first, like, close to home location in March 2020. And we sort of hit this point where it was, you know, we spent about a month with our head in our hands. You know, what have we done? What's going on? How's this going to work? And suddenly what started to happen was that word got around that local market that, like, there was this co-working space opening. And if you remember back to 2020, we were all locked in. We were all at home. We were all struggling to kind of, you know, work and manage our lives and deal with this kind of, you know, changing society that we were living in. But there was also no certainty as to when this would end. But what suddenly became apparent was that people wanted to work kind of closer to home. They wanted somewhere they can just drop out of the house for a couple of hours. And so we were getting this demand. So we took this punt sort of June, July 2020 to open this space, and it exploded. I mean, it was amazing. It's sort of suddenly this demand was there. This changing landscape was there. And so we kind of, you know, we ran with it in reality. You know, the city centers were still struggling. We had a space in Leeds, which now is an incredibly successful space for us. You know, that was difficult in 2020 into 2021. But we, you know, we worked on a refurb. We worked on a long-term program with our landlord partner there to go and to make sure that when the world did bounce back, we were ready to. And so suddenly, you know, we started building whilst everyone was, you know, down in the dumps. And we started to kind of take this positive view that the world will come back, but it will come back in a different way. People will want to kind of consume space in a very different way, much more flexibly. And I guess with all of that, you know, suddenly the sort of, as the world started to resurface and people's working patterns totally evolved, totally changed, it played hugely into what we were doing. And we started to take on more and more space. Landlords who couldn't go and deliver space on a traditional basis suddenly had a kind of a much more flexible outlook, and they needed a partner to go and deliver it. And that's where we got to. So we sit here today in Putney, you know, another kind of close to home location, which, as you can see, is like 90% full.
Buzzing.
It is absolutely. And I think, you know, across the board, we're seeing really positive results. We've got just under 250,000 square feet now across 13 locations. You know, we're doing close to home, but we're doing city center. We've just opened our first space in Marylebone in partnership with Howard Walden Estate. We're flying in Birmingham city center with CBRE Investment Management. And we're seeing this kind of growth across both close to home and city center locations, as well as regional and London. So there's this shift in our direction. You know, the market's moved in our direction, and, you know, we've got the offering, we've got the model, we've got the stock, and we're starting to drive it. And the machine's moving in the right direction.
Well, it looks like a well-oiled machine, and what an incredible journey that you've had. And in that story that you just told, I want to pick some of that apart to ask how you're doing it, how you're seeing success. But I want to go back to your Headspace days, because I came to Hatton Garden once. Going back to the Hatton Garden days, I remember I came to Headspace Hatton Garden and we did a Think Bold event there. This was when I was getting Bold started back in the day, trying to figure out what our business was going to be. And we had an event downstairs. It was amazing. But back then, we were trying to convince landlords that they needed to be thinking about flex and they needed to bring it in on a management agreement because lease arbitrage wasn't the future. You aptly spotted that and you're succeeding at it. So what do you think has sort of flipped? What switch has flipped for landlords? Because you're on management agreements now. Mm-hmm. What has been that flip? Because back in the day, I mean, I was trying to get people to have phone calls with me and set up meetings to talk about management agreements. And as soon as I said the word management agreement, you know, they wouldn't really do it because they're too nice, but they'd hang up the phone on you.
You're right. I think the market's shifted massively. And there's a few reasons behind it. When we started the business 2019, pre-COVID, different world, it was purely about management agreements. So we could see there was this glimmer. We could see that there was this need for landlords to kind of work with operators like us who could kind of deliver the right sort of offering to their end user. I think in hindsight, you know, we may have been a bit early, actually. And it could be that the way the world shifted in our favor, because what we're suddenly seeing now, you know, 4 years later, is that there is this kind of seismic shift in the way space is delivered. And now every landlord who traditionally would have done a 5-10 year lease, you know, sat on their hands, collected 4 rent checks a year, lovely business, it doesn't work anymore. And they're recognizing that the shift in kind of consumer behavior, the way people want to consume office space, has changed in a way that, I mean, I can't think of another period in history where those patterns of behavior have changed. So, you know, there's a need to partner with someone who can deliver a kind of hospitality-driven experience for people, because it's a very different business to the traditional real estate business. But we, and I'm sure many other operators, we don't see ourselves as a property business at all. We see ourselves as a hospitality business. And, you know, that's totally different to being, you know, a capital allocator. You know, I couldn't do what our landlord partners do, and I don't think they can do what we can do, which is why they bring us in. So I think that mindset shift has happened. And I think the other point is that what landlords are really recognizing is that, you know, this is about driving the quality of their buildings. It's about driving people into their buildings. And we're seeing, particularly in larger spaces, that flex as an amenity is critical to kind of delivering, you know, traditional leasing on upper floors. So we're not saying flex is the only way forward. You're never going to go get a traditional lease anymore, but you kind of need both. So our building in Birmingham is a great example. It's a brand new, brilliantly done 200,000 square foot building. CBRE Investment Management have run that process. They brought us in, and they had the foresight to not to bring us in as a reaction, but to bring us in like really early on in the business plan, because they knew they needed to deliver a flex space, but not just any kind of lease flex space. They needed it to be integrated with the building. They needed it to be kind of contiguous with the offering across the building, and it becomes part of the amenity. It becomes part of the sell on the traditional leasing on the upper floors. Now, we're doing very well there. We've actually, you know, we just hit 100% occupancy on our private offices, but it's a really interesting play because it allows them to offer something additional to their other members or their other tenants on the traditional floor.
And so in that example, how is adding that additional layer of the flex into the building, how is that working for the rest of the building? What does that blend look like?
So I think it very much is relatively nascent. The building only launched last summer. So for on the traditional leasing, you know, there's a much longer kind of leasing period. But I think that the flex space allows them to offer something to their traditional tenants and prospective tenants that they can't otherwise, which is, you know, access to hospitality, meeting rooms, access to an incredible event space that we look after, access to kind of ground floor co-working flexible space. We run through a third party, we run a cafe that's not only open to the public, but allows us to kind of offer internally to the building. We have a climbing wall on site. We have gyms. We have all the end of journey facilities. We manage the whole package and it enables a kind of a very different approach. So someone's coming to look at a building, you're going to remember, okay, there's a Cat A floor and a Cat A floor. There's obviously benefits to some buildings over others. You're going to remember that empty Cat A floor that had the flex space on the floor below with a buzzing kind of environment and lots of people through the door and great energy versus here's a stack of empty Cat A floors. And so I think those elements help sell. And when someone's in the building, you know what? You don't need to go and build your own town hall space because you're going to use it once a month as a business. It's going to take up 1,000 square feet of your leased space. But actually, you know, don't build that. Go and use the space that is available in the building that's run by the flex operator, rent it when you need it, space on demand rather than kind of, you know, space because you're contractually obliged to use it. And it makes it a very different kind of proposition. I think it makes it much more fluid.
You're preaching to the choir here, and I've been trying to say this sort of same thing for some time. I think everything you said is spot on.
Why? How are you? Oh, can you hear me? Sorry, you're breaking up.
80% of mobile phone calls are made from inside buildings. And while energy-efficient building materials like low-E glass are good for the environment, they block mobile signal entering from outdoors. Poor indoor mobile signal can mean lower productivity for businesses, make buildings less appealing to prospective tenants, and ultimately impact the valuation of the building itself. Freshwave solves this problem. We deploy in-building mobile systems that connect directly to the mobile network you need, whether that's just one operator or four. This guarantees the quality of service. Visit freshwavegroup.com to find out more.
To me, nearly every office asset needs to have some sort of component of flex and hospitality in it to be able to complement the leasing strategy of the building. From a practical perspective, does that mean in that building or others, are the leasing agents, when they're doing tours, taking them through your space as well? And are there economic benefits other than, I mean, granted, you know, yes, I can have a 10,000 square foot floor. I don't have to put meeting rooms, as many meeting rooms, because I've got access to meeting rooms. Is there another equation in there that enables the leased customer to tap into the flex space?
Yeah, I think just on your question about leasing agents, I think increasingly we are seeing a far greater awareness, understanding, and probably appreciation of kind of flex space. I think the traditional market's maybe taken its time to kind of grow into this appreciation of flex.
You're very kind.
I'm being diplomatic. But, you know, and some agents are so much more forward thinking. Others are still slightly skeptical. I think in truth, I feel like the reason behind that is because it's sort of felt like maybe a bit of a threat to the traditional leasing market. The ones that have adopted and like started to move with the times and accept flex are the ones that are actually reaping the rewards from it, because, you know, doing deals, doing leasing deals, doing kind of license agreement deals with a flex operator, frankly, is pretty easy when you're working with the right flex operator, because, you know, from an agent perspective, you can do very well and not have to do a huge amount of work. So I think agents are starting to see that appreciation. And I think actually we're seeing it now, you know, buildings where we are in a kind of multi-let scenario, we are seeing the agents, you know, they start their tour in our space, you kind of get an acceptance. It's either to get a sense of the feel. Sometimes they'll do it as a come and have a look what your space could look like, because it's fitted and it's, you know, it's got people there. And I think that helps in terms of the overall sale. Look, in terms of economic benefits, I think there's a huge economic benefit in not having to take additional space for things that are already in the building. So, you know, if you think through the cost of allowing kind of 15, 20% of your leased space to be meeting room space, you know, what you're paying for that in rent, in rates, in service charge, in maintenance, in utilities over the course of a 5 or 10 year lease, when actually you just kind of come and use the space and book it as and when you need it, you know, the value proposition's enormous. So I think there's a great deal in that respect. I think it also enables people to feel like there's more growth potential in their building. So, you know, if you know you've got, you know, 10,000 feet in a building and you're kind of, you know you're going to grow, but actually you're not sure exactly what the parameters are going to be, rather than having to sublease your space, go and find something new, fit out again, you can expand within the sort of the building by using the flex space as a kind of, you know, a sort of a growth area. So I think there's so many benefits in truth. And actually, I think the truth is, though, it makes for a better customer experience having the right flex operator in a building, because, you know, flex operators are obsessed by hospitality. They're obsessed by making things better and a better environment and a working environment you want to be in. And that's what we and other operators, that's what we do all day, every day. You know, it's not easy. It's doable, but you need to be obsessive over it.
So what do you think about the landlords then that are spinning up their own flex operations? Do you think that's a mistake?
No, I don't at all. I think if they've got the right quantum of space, I think they should be doing it in truth. You know, there are some really good examples of it. There's some not so good examples, but I think, you know, landlords that have the quantum across a wide range portfolio, but I think what they've noticed, and I speak to a lot of these guys, I'm sure you do too, what they've noticed is like, it's hard, you know, this is a different business. So you've got to go and build the team. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to hire someone out of, you know, an operator and they're just going to run the show for me. You know, because actually, you know, I look at the team and the machine we've built here. You know, you've got to focus on marketing. You've got to focus on your sales engine. You've got to focus on operations, facilities management, the finance piece. Like, there's so many different elements that you've got to think about before you even start to think about hiring people in the building, community management, running events. You know, all of these things are really critical. And I think what's happened over the last few years, the industry's matured a lot, you know, particularly we talked before about, you know, 2012, like it was a different world back then. You know, you could deliver a space that looked really nice and you would fill it because it looked really nice. There's plenty of operations now.
Table stakes now.
Right, exactly. So the customer is much more aware. They have a broader depth of kind of offering for them. And so you've got to compete in all areas. And so it's really hard to do that as a traditional landlord it is a side project. And if you've got the quantum, you can go and invest a few million quid in the operational piece of it, then do it. But most landlords we know, they neither have that kind of capability to do it or really want to, because it's a whole different ball game and it's something totally new to them. So I think the ones that can do it and can do it successfully, there will be few and far between, but amazing to them. And there's some really good examples of ones that are doing it well. But it's hard and it's a very different ball game, and you don't necessarily need to. It's about partnering with the right operator who can go and deliver for you.
Well, I can't say I disagree with that for sure. What has been for you then in the Space Made journey? What's been the hardest part about this, or the part that you didn't think was going to be hard that was hard?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the sort of the speed at which the machine builds, I think, has been a really interesting one. You know, you know what you have to do from the outset. You understand, if you have a basic understanding of marketing and of sales, you kind of know what the process is. But I suppose it's been the speed at which we've got to that point. We started, as I said, end of 2019. We added building after building, bit by bit. And actually, it was only really beginning of 23 that we just really took a step back. We invested a great deal in the team, and then we invested a great deal in the processes and the infrastructure. And we did a lot of that kind of, you know, dirty behind the scenes work, systems integrations. You know, it's messy. It's like, it's long. It always takes longer than you think. And then, you know, but you've got to know what your end goal is. And I think only now, sort of early Q1 2024, we're starting to see the rewards. And actually, I can see it. You know, we track a lot of metrics, but I can see, you know, the first kind of couple of months of 24, we've seen exponential growth across sort of every metric in reality. You know, we're hitting kind of, our membership growth is growing 18% month on month. Our revenue is growing 22% month on month. We're starting to hit huge numbers for us compared to where we were in terms of, you know, our website visits. And it may not sound huge to a lot of people, but you know, the last few months we've been averaging over 1,000 kind of website visits a day.
Well, you guys, if I can say, you guys took a bold move and started advertising around the train stations.
Yeah, we did.
And as a result of that, I imagine the website traffic has increased.
Yeah, that was one activation, and it made a difference at the time. You know, as I said before, we've got a lot of kind of close to home locations. So we went long on that, you know, and actually I think what we've done quite well, and this is a great credit to our marketing team and our head of marketing, Anna, who's kind of driven this, but we've really honed in on kind of the messaging, and we've tried to have a bit of fun with it. And I think there's a balance between getting, you know, your digital marketing strategy and then your kind of old school out of home marketing strategies together and making sure they're all kind of crossing over. So, you know, that we did a really good, as you mentioned, a really nice kind of, in January, we did this sort of huge billboard campaign across all our close to home locations. We took hundreds of billboards, and it was around January Blues, and the messaging was fun, and it was like work.
It was clever. I loved it.
And it did drive a lot of traffic, and I think that was really interesting, and we managed to convert a lot of sales off the back of it. But those sorts of elements are really fun. We did a little guerrilla campaign with it. You know, I don't know if you're allowed to do it. It might have been illegal. I don't know. But we tagged loads of kind of bikes with like little kind of, put little elastic bands around the steering with a funny kind of message about getting better coffee in the space. Or
did you have some sort of tracking device on that so you can see where they're going?
Yeah. We stuck QR codes, which meant then we could track sort of what campaign landed and what didn't. So, you know, I think, as you know, going back to your question before, the sort of sophistication of the systems and building that system, it takes time. It takes time to see the rewards from it. And I think we are starting to see that now. But, you know, it probably took us a year to really build out a much more sophisticated kind of infrastructure to kind of take us to the next level. And I think that's always the challenge of growing any business, right? Not just Flex, not co-working, but any business is leveling up when you need to and investing that time, maybe sometimes taking a step back to take two steps forward.
I think that's good advice for other operators, but also for landlords who are thinking whether they're going to get into the game themselves or partner with someone. It's, you know, that whole aspect of building the machine and then making sure the marketing works. So my question is, with the management agreement, you guys have, you know, a dozen properties, different landlords. One landlord has a couple of properties and they try to do a campaign. They're not going to be as impactful as you're doing a campaign across three times as many locations. So you can spread the cost, but get the bigger impact. So this is more a granular question, but I assume that every P&L, every different asset is contributing to some sort of central marketing pot.
Yeah, I think that, yes, that is right. They do that. And I think that was sort of, again, another transition, because initially it was every P&L was very separate when we started. But actually, there's a much greater kind of benefit, as you've highlighted, as that campaign highlighted, to kind of that central marketing. So it's really important. You know, we have a number of landlords that we have, you know, two or three buildings with. But actually, you know, the benefit to each of those landlords is the kind of reach that we have. You know, having a single website where you're advertising a single space in a single location is never going to have the same traction as a brand that can kind of bring you into this ecosystem. So for us, like, that network effect is really important. And we've actually always taken the view of this kind of, you know, there still remains this independence of each site. So you'll notice each of our sites has its own individual brand.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
And just if I can interject real quick.
Of course.
So you just highlighted the benefit, you know, of the landlord having that overarching brand, which I agree with, because I always hashtag brand matters in this industry. But the fact that you guys don't have that overarching brand very visible on every single location, and what you're saying here is every location is its own sort of micro brand. Yeah. Why did you go that route? Why isn't it all space made?
It's a really good question. I think we took this view very early on that actually every space has its own kind of quirks and intricacies. And I think what we wanted to sort of, we were really mindful that a lot of members of any co-working space were suddenly becoming secondary to the sort of overarching co-working operator brand. So we've seen it all before, we know the brands, but there's this sort of distinction and almost this kind of, there's a slight stigma that you're in a, you know, a branded operator building.
In a Regis.
I didn't want to say. I have no negativity towards any brand at all. But like you have, you know, there is a stigma attached to it sometimes, because someone sees that as the address and you're like, oh, well, they're probably in a, you know, broom cupboard at the back somewhere. Actually, what we really felt was that there's a kind of a pressing need for people to feel like, you know, they're in a branded space that sort of has a brand identity. But actually, it reflects their kind of business's brand personality. And I think the other piece of it was that we felt if we had a single granular brand, it's very hard to do different types of things. So you're, you know, very often, and I found this with my old business with Headspace, which was a single brand, but actually I was always looking for a building that suited the Headspace brand. We can look at things with a totally different viewpoint. We look at a building, we get approached by a landlord, and they say, this is the space. You know, it's either self-contained or it's part of an amenity, whatever it might be. But we need a solution for this space, which enables us to kind of go into a very different scope. And we can look at, understand, we build a brand for that particular product, which means that, you know, the look and feel is different. So you'll walk into any of our spaces, they're all different. They all have a different appeal because they're all in very different neighborhoods. And they're all, you know, where we are in Putney is a different consumer to Central Leeds, to Marylebone, to the building we're about to open in Barbican, to Archway in North London. They're all different. The buildings are different. The type of user is different. So you have to kind of create something that works for that particular market. And it gives us much more scope and variety. It probably gives us more headaches in terms of like actually every time thinking up and working out a brand strategy for that particular building, understanding that target market. But I think it allows us to hone in on what the end user of that space really wants and create a product that works for them rather than creating a product that we just deliver time after time. You know, it's out with the cookie cutter. It's much more about kind of bespoke design and creating something that works for that particular market.
It makes sense. This is, you know, going back to 2019 when Nuflex and Bold partnered up and they brought the Bold brand into the portfolio. It was to try to address this need from landlords to, okay, well, we've got one brand, but that brand doesn't fit on your building, so we can't do any business. Mm-hmm. Okay, but if we have a stable of brands across the value spectrum, then maybe we can figure out a way to make it work. So I get that. And I think you've done it very cleverly because what I interpret of how you're delivering the individuality, you've got a sort of a minimum, I don't want to say minimum, but you've got a standard.
For sure.
You've got a standard that you're going to deliver, but then you customize that standard. You don't sacrifice or compromise the standard. You customize it for that particular market.
Yeah, look, you know, all our spaces are, you know, brand name by space made. And for us, as Spacemade becomes more of a kind of recognized brand in the industry and in the market, that becomes a sort of, you know, a quality assurance play. You know what you're getting. You know, this is a Spacemade building, and you understand that there's a real kind of, there's a quality, there's a way of doing things, there's a hospitality experience. But the overarching brand allows you to kind of feel like, okay, this is a space for me. This works for me. And it allows us to attract such a diverse range of customers, which I think is amazing.
That's a big value bomb.
So is it safe to say then that you think that every single office asset should have hospitality-driven space as a service operator in it?
That is a really good question. I think probably not, funnily enough, because I think there are markets and I think there are buildings that frankly don't lend themselves to it. But I would say that, you know, kind of across what we would deem to be kind of quality buildings or quality markets, then for sure, there is a massive need for it. You have such a kind of spectrum across the office market. I think that spectrum's increased over the last few years, well, with like the opening up of Class E in terms of kind of, you know, planning constraints being lifted. So, but I think you've got to be careful. You know, it doesn't work in every single building. I can assure you, we look at far more stuff than we sign. And there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work. And we got to be really clear. We got to be really sure that particular buildings and particular locations work incredibly well, that there's going to be demand. There's going to be a need for a variety of space. There's going to be kind of that demand for co-working. And actually, there's going to be an energy that we can add to it. It doesn't happen in every building, funnily enough. But, you know, we like to think that actually there should be flex in pretty much every kind of strong office market that exists. And I think it's coming. I think it's, you know, it's there in most markets or strong markets, but I think it's coming. And we can see that demand kind of growing, honestly, growing month on month.
Yeah, well, flex is on fire for sure. I think, like you rightly said earlier, it depends on the market, depends on the building, but most buildings are going to need a hospitality layer. If at some point in the next few years, most buildings do have a hospitality layer, or do they all become the same? Do they risk becoming the same? So we go back to that, okay, we got a tour of this Cat A building, a tour of that Cat A building, and I don't really remember it, but oh, that one had a hospitality layer in it. But if they all start having hospitality layers, what is the differentiation?
I think you could argue that point around hotels, right? Once you've seen a hotel, you've seen they've all got beds in them. They've all got a bar in them. You know, some have got a gym in them, but basically they're all the same. We know that not to be true because every brand has a different kind of a different identity. It appeals to a different customer and creates a different experience. And I think that is true or becoming true of flex. We're seeing a level of sophistication now that, you know, in my sort of 12, 13 years in the flex industry, I've not seen this level of quality consistently across various different brands. And I think that makes for a better experience for the customer. So, you know, you're going to start to see people being driven towards certain brands because they focus on whatever is important to them. It might be hospitality. It might be experience. It might be that they've got incredible meeting room technology. It might be that they've got podcast studios like the one we're sitting in today. It could be a number of things. And I think every operator will focus on a different niche that allows you to kind of go and deliver something a bit different. And then I think the only other point I'd like to make on this is that I think what my sort of, I suppose, prediction as the market grows and matures is that we're going to see more and more kind of sector specific spaces. So you're going to see a growth in kind of sort of not necessarily incubator spaces, but spaces that focus on a particular industry and allow that industry to flourish. And that again becomes a sort of a sticking point that allows people to kind of grow within a field, within a sector, enjoy kind of being around complementary businesses that are really honed in on what they're doing. So you're going to see that kind of growth. And I think the market just keeps growing, keeps differentiating, and then will continue to kind of surprise us all really in delivering better quality and better offerings.
Wow, that is very well said. I think this is where that community really hits home in our industry and the curation of that community. We could give a shout out to Level 39 at Canary Wharf as being one of the OGs at doing that for the fintech community in Canary Wharf, London. I agree with you. And I look forward to seeing this happen and seeing more brand differentiation and the future's flex.
The future is flex, indeed.
Well, thanks, Johnny, for coming on and sharing your insights and your story. Very impressive, and looking forward to our offline conversations.
Yeah, awesome. And look, thank you to you too. You do an incredible job for the industry in kind of promoting the value of Flex, continually talking about it, opening up those conversations and opening up the awareness. So from my perspective, you know, there's a lot of different competitors in the market, but actually the truth is that, you know, we're not really competing for the same piece of the pie. You know, the pie is just getting bigger. And I think there's a great benefit to all of us. And the work you do, I think, contributes to that enormously.
Very kind of you to say. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself.
Mobile signal inside buildings is a must-have. And connectivity infrastructure as a service provider, Freshwave, delivers it with flexible commercial terms that suit you. From landlord-funded mobile systems to pay-as-you-occupy, or a mixture of the two, we work with you to deliver the digital connectivity you and your building needs. So whether you're a real estate developer, landlord, or tenant, we'll make sure you're on. Visit freshwavegroup.com to find out more.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. And remember, fortune favors the bold. Drumroll, please. P.S. If you want to find out about future-proofing your portfolio, head over to newflex.com.
Attention business owners, my name is Jason Allen Scott, and I've got a game-changing opportunity. At least I think it is, and so do my clients. Are you ready to build a wildly successful business from your podcast, or use your podcast to increase the success of your business? Why not try Podcasting for Business, the ultimate program to monetize your message and skyrocket your success? I'll work closely with you to refine your business model, revenue streams, and messaging, ensuring your podcast becomes a powerful tool for driving growth and generating income, just like we've done for so many clients before. As a seasoned podcasting coach, I've helped countless entrepreneurs transform their podcasts into thriving, profitable ventures. Our unique hybrid coaching model combines online learning with personalized one-to-one coaching calls. Together, we'll fine-tune your podcast's business potential, creating a clear roadmap to success that aligns with your goals and vision. Don't miss this opportunity to transform your podcast into a profitable business. Visit podcastingforbusiness.co today and take the first steps towards unlocking your podcasting potential. Let's build something special together.